I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and joining me now to talk about this disease that affects so many is Tamara Levine. She's the author of a recent book, But Hope Is Longer, Navigating the Country of Breast Cancer. I'll ask her about the genesis of this book, which is rooted in a series of email updates she sent friends and family when in the summer of 2009 she was diagnosed with an aggressive stage 3 breast cancer. In the book, she chronicles her experiences with the medical profession, the treatment she undertook, and the feelings, emotional and otherwise, she endured. There are costs to this disease, and I'll get Ms. Levine to tell us those, the toll it takes on the patient and their family. Tamara Levine is an adult educator and literacy activist. She's worked with unions and employers on literacy in the workplace and clear language initiatives across the country. This book is published by Second Story Press. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from Ottawa today, Tamara Levine. Ms. Levine, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Good. Thank you. Well,
stage 3 cancer, which I mentioned in the introduction, is what you were diagnosed with 3 years ago, 4 years ago now?
4 years ago now.
Yeah. For the layman, for someone listening to us who may not know, what's the difference between, say, stage 3 and stage 2 or stage 1?
Well, stage 3 means that the cancer has moved beyond its original site. And in my case, the site was in my left breast. And because the cancer had traveled to my lymph nodes, which are in my underarm, and there was a tumor both in my breast and in my underarm, that's why it's called stage 3. If it had gone further than that, say into my liver or lungs or bones, that would be stage 4, and there is no stage 5.
I see. And how did you come across it? I mean, do you do those self-examination things that they suggest you do? Or?
I wasn't as good at that as I should have been, I say now with hindsight. But I did go for regular mammograms every year. And I had been for a mammogram 10 months before I found the lump in my armpit, and it had been clear. What happened was in June of 2009, I went for an early morning walk with a friend, as I often do, came home and had a shower and found a lump about the size of a golf ball in my armpit. It actually never crossed my mind at that moment that it might be cancer. I thought, oh, I pulled a muscle or, something else has happened because I'd had the clear mammogram. But when I saw my family doctor who sent me for a series of tests that culminated in a biopsy 6 weeks later, there was the diagnosis.
And so what do doctors, what does the medical profession suggest for women? In terms of checking, I mean, self-examinations, those are to be done regularly, mammograms yearly, is that right?
Generally speaking, mammograms are yearly. The self-checking thing has been really under discussion over the last few years. Some doctors recommend it, others say it doesn't help. It's not at all clear what the best way to proceed is. I believe that it's probably a good thing to do just to see if there's anything unusual there. And certainly I found something quite unusual on that fateful morning.
Yeah. And I guess partners have a part to play in that as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. And actually when I came downstairs, my husband was sitting reading the paper at breakfast, and I asked him to check out this lump, and his mom had died of breast cancer when she was only 35 and he was 12, and I think the alarm bells went off for him quicker than they did for me, and he said, you better check this out right away. I'd been inclined to maybe leave it for a week or so and see if it went away on its own. But he was right, and I did see my doctor right away.
So what's it like when you find out that you have cancer? I mean, what do you think of first?
Oh, well, it's like being catapulted out of the world that we've known. Of course, when you're going through all the tests and you have a lump in your underarm and then the doctor discovers another lump in your breast and you're going through ultrasounds and mammograms and MRIs and biopsies, of course, you sort of feel like the cards are increasingly stacked against you. So it's not a total shock when it comes, but of course you keep hoping that it's benign, that it's a cyst, that it's not a malignant tumor. And so when you do actually find out, it is completely devastating. Everything changes. Who am I now that I have cancer? I saw myself as healthy and resilient and well, I exercised, I ate well, I did everything I could to take care of myself. What does this mean now that I have a dire disease? What will my life look like? You don't know that yet, but you know that treatment can be pretty brutal. You know that you'll probably have to take a significant amount of time off of work as you go through treatment. And you worry about death. You worry about, am I going to make it? Will I be here for myself? Will I be here for my family? What will it be like for them? And you don't know yet what the plan is. I sometimes call that period the black hole between getting the diagnosis and getting on track for a plan, and that's a very, very difficult time of really not knowing exactly what you're dealing with or what treatment will be involved or, in fact, what the prognosis is. What is this cancer? Tell me what you can about it. What does it mean? What are my chances? So you're very, very much in the dark, and that's loaded with anxiety.
Now, did you find in the course of all of this that that one could get too much information, whether it's from the medical professionals or, say, just friends and family or people that you encounter with their own, say, experiences?
Sometimes there's definitely too much information. It's interesting. You know, you have to tell people. You need to tell your family. You need to tell your coworkers. You need to tell your friends. Of course, a lot of people that you tell have a story about an aunt, a mother, a sister who's gone through this, or sometimes themselves. And, you know, what you really want to hear when you first tell people is, oh, shit, and then have them give you a big hug. You want them to connect with you emotionally with how hard this is. One of the hardest things was hearing comments from well-meaning people. They certainly, you know, weren't trying to be malicious in any way, but who would say, oh, just think positively and everything's going to be fine. And I know people who have, you know, really worked on that and tried hard to think positively, and it didn't necessarily work out that way. There is a lot of information out there, for sure, on the Internet. It's hard to sift through that. I found that really difficult sometimes going to the Internet. I found it pretty terrifying. I did have a few books that I would refer to. I found, especially in that black hole month between diagnosis and plan, that there wasn't a lot of information coming forward from the hospital, from the doctors. I basically had one meeting with a surgeon a couple of weeks after diagnosis, who told me there would be a 7-week wait time till surgery. And that was already a couple of months after finding the lump, and it was summertime, And I was told, you know, a lot of people are on vacation and operating rooms are running at half mast. And all I could think of was, my cancer is not on vacation. And I'm worried that it's rampaging through my body. And in fact, in my case, it was a fluke infection in my underarm that was probably caused by the biopsy, that even though it was painful and I was feverish and weak, it was what got me on the right track. I wasn't sure that surgery was the right way to go, even though it was the more standard way to go, because it was already in my lymph nodes and it had spread that far. I wondered whether a more systemic approach like chemotherapy might be better first and then surgery afterwards. And ironically, it was this infection and an angel nurse who I had met when I met with the surgeon who suggested I see the oncologist quickly. And I did that, and the oncologist said, we're going to start with chemo first. But it was a fluke.
Yeah.
It wasn't part of the original plan. And but I feel like it got me on track.
How long after finding out that you had cancer did you start writing?
I started writing about a month after the diagnosis. And initially, it was really just a quick way of letting people know what was going on, and it was fairly short. It was a page. But as time went on, I found that the writing really became almost like therapy for me.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote longer and more often. There were 11 letters in all over about a year and a half period. And the circle of recipients of the letters grew as time went on. People passed them on to others, and people asked to be on my list. And one of the things that people said who were reading my letters was, they felt grateful to be taken inside the experience, that they had known people who'd gone through this or known about it, but they hadn't ever experienced sort of the rawness of the cancer and the treatment experience in the same way until they read my letters. And I was glad to be able to do that.
So I just got your book this morning. That's what's in this book, are these letters, and as well as other comments from others?
The book is, yes, the letters are there. And each letter is preceded by an introduction on one of the themes of the book. And it's followed by reflections, looking back at that time from a distance of a couple of years. And so while the letters were written in the immediacy of what was going on, the reflections are have a different kind of perspective, I guess, looking back over time. And the other thing that's in the book is a chapter at the end called Voices of the Healers. Because I interviewed all of my doctors, my two oncologists, a medical oncologist and radiation oncologist, as well as my surgeon, as well as my naturopath and my life coach. So there are five healers, and their voices are throughout the book in sidebars, and you meet them as part of the story. But then you hear directly from them in this last chapter. And then I close with a vision of imagining a world without cancer or with less cancer, that's a healthier world with a healthier environment. And also what a better system of cancer care might look like.
Now, there have been advancements in medical science and the sort that have helped, right? I mean, the difference of someone diagnosed with breast cancer, say, 50 years ago, the prognosis is probably a little bit better than it is today.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. There is much better and more successful treatment out there. There's no question. But on the other side, there are more of us.
Mm.
There, you know, a few years ago, you know, you had one chance in 20 of getting breast cancer. Now it's 1 in 8 in Canada. And so what's that about? It's perhaps a result of better screening, but I also believe it's a result of a more toxic world that we live in terms of what we eat and drink and put on our bodies and breathe, etc.
You've got a great line in the book about cancer being, I guess, the great equalizer. Yet, at the same time, our access to treatment varies, even in this country, right?
That's right. You know, fortunately, we live in a country that has universal public health care that is available to anyone who needs it without cost. But that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of other costs that aren't covered. I was fortunate that I had a job that I had long-term disability with. And so it meant that I was able to receive 70% of my income while I was going through treatment. A lot of jobs don't have that. And so if you've exhausted your sick leave and you've exhausted your employment insurance, there aren't a lot of options other than welfare or, in some cases, CPP disability. So that's one area. Another area is around extended health care plans and which drugs are covered. As long as you're in hospital, your drugs are covered, your chemotherapy, for example. But a lot of the drugs you take at home to deal with side effects are not covered. I remember when I was on my second chemo drug, I had 4 rounds of one and then 4 rounds of a second one. And I knew that it was particularly brutal because I had a couple of women in my support group who ended up in hospital as a result of its side effects. So when I was about to start, I asked my oncologist, I said, what can we do? Is there anything that will help deal with these side effects? And he said, yes, there is a shot that you can take that will help reduce the chances of your white blood cells plummeting and you ending up in hospital. Do you have a drug plan? This shot, which I would need 4 of, was going to cost $1,200 per shot. And thankfully, I had a drug plan, but I worried about, well, what if I didn't? And what about all the women who don't?
Yeah.
Another area is around complementary cancer care. The work with the naturopath and the various supplements, and in my case, intravenous vitamin C was part of my naturopathic care as well as acupuncture. And I truly believe that straddling both systems of complementary and mainstream cancer care was what healed me and why I'm well today. But again, most often those costs are not covered by either public health or by extended health care plans, and so it can be a prohibitive cost.
The other thing that you talk about in the book, and I think is something that we should all learn from and we should all talk about, is death. I mean, you talk about our society and how we operate. Death is not something we're comfortable talking about, right? But I guess when you have cancer and you have a disease like this, it's something you automatically must confront.
It is part of what you're dealing with, for sure. And you're so right that we deal in a culture that really doesn't deal with death very well or talk about it very well. We have lots of euphemisms for it. And we're so far removed from, times 100 years ago when, bodies were in our homes and they were washed and they were prepared for burial. It's a very distant part of our lives for the most part now. And I knew that death was a possibility in my case. Nobody told me, get your affairs in order, but it was a reality nonetheless. And so I really had to wrestle with it. I had to have death with me at the table. I had to imagine what the lives of my family would look like if I wasn't there, and I worried about what the dying might be like aside from death itself. A couple of months after I was diagnosed and was already going through treatment, my 85-year-old dad, who had been seemingly well and healthy, he had just spent time in the woods chainsawing and cutting wood in the fall here. He was having pains in his legs and had some blood tests and was diagnosed with acute leukemia and was gone 10 days later. And so while I was wrestling with my own fear of death, I lost my dad. And so death was very much front and center, but I also found that once it was part of me, it was less scary. And if we're not so afraid of death, then other things become less frightening too. If we can conquer that fear of death, there's not much to be afraid of anymore.
I started the interview off the top in the introduction saying that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. For you, what should this month mean to us? What should we reflect upon?
I would really like us to think about what we can do as individuals as well as a society to really reduce the occurrence of this disease, to really look at prevention and what we can do to prevent the disease, especially around the environment and pollution on the one hand, and on the other hand, just make treatment as safe and effective and least harmful to the women who are affected. So, that would be my message.
Tamara, it's been a real pleasure talking to you today. I can't wait to read the book, and from what I've read of it thus far and know of it, I think you've done a great service. Congratulations on the book. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate this chance to talk to you.
You're very welcome. The book is called But Hope is Longer, Navigating the Country of Breast Cancer. It's from Second Story Press. Its author, Tamara Levine, joined me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.